Welcome, everyone. This is our third and final class in the What Are the Voices Saying Now series. I'm really glad everybody could make it tonight, and I'm really excited about our conversation. Before we get going, let me say a couple things to you. I think you guys all know the deal at this point. You're all muted right now so that we can have a clear conversation without a lot of background noise. The way to unmute yourself is to hit *6. That's *6 on your phone. And you would be most welcome and most encouraged to participate if you at all feel like it tonight. And more specifically, when you get ready to, you know you want to say something, hit *6 on your phone. That'll bring you live on the call. Now, you can actually do that a tiny bit early if you want to. If you know you're going to have something to say, that way you can sort of be live on the call and then be ready to jump in at the point when there's an opening for that. And the way you do that is just say your name. So you just say your name, hey Dave, and your name, or however you want to do that, just to interject yourself in there, and then I will call on people as they announce themselves. And then after we talk and you're done with your turn, then if you could please hit *6 on your phone again to bring yourself back into the background to make sure that if there's any noise on your phone line that the rest of the people won't hear it. Let's see. And I think folks are familiar with the privileged environment on these calls, that we won't be referring to other speakers. We obviously won't give advice. We won't use shoulds, those sorts of things, just as we have in the past call. So you had a very big assignment, I think. Two actually very big assignments. One was to make a tape, or actually these days, I'm kind of in the old days there, a recording in one of the 10,000 different ways there are now to do that, of the things that you realize that you would like to hear, as opposed to the voices of conditioned mind and all of the kind of hateful things that the voices say. To make a recording of that and to listen to it as much as possible. So that was big all in itself. And then you were also asked to make a plan for each day where you would decide some kind thing you would do for yourself, sort of in opposition to the voices, even more exactly, you might say, to give your experience of something that is true in the way that kindness is, rather than, you know, the hatefulness and the sabotage and all the stuff that goes with conditioned mind. So that was your assignment, and so perhaps we could hear from people about what you noticed about that. Remember, you hit *6 on your phone.
This is Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dave. So the assignment was fun, and I noticed when I was reading it at first, the first thing the voices said is, oh, this recording stuff, you know, you don't know how to do that on a computer, and it was such a pain before, and how are we going to do this?
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so that was really interesting. And it's my experience from practice, you know, I had a little time on Sunday, and it's my experience that I just need to prioritize it. I just need to do it first.
Yeah.
You know, sorry,
Michael, I was just gonna interject there and say, which is good practice in itself, isn't it? No matter what the thing is that you really want to do for yourself, to know that, you know, to prioritize that and know that that's important, and that, you know, the voices are going to tend to take it away from you, and you got to, you know, it's really up to you to make it happen.
Yeah, and I can be, you know, vulnerable to kind of not enough time, I'm too busy, you know, I'll do this later. But, you know, life always gives me enough time.
Yes, especially for things that support the heart.
Yes, yes, because, you know, when I do those things that support the heart, it really helps to reprioritize everything else so that everything else does have enough time and like that.
Yeah, it's so true because, of course, it looks from within conditioned mind, it looks like there's not time for anything because, of course, conditioned mind is taking up all the space. You know, it's filling every available moment with, you know, garbage, basically, that is thrown at you from every single possible direction. And so, you know, you're trying to deal with that and at the same time, you know, live your life and get stuff done. So,
Right. Boy,
that's kind of a lot to ask of a person. But you start doing things that support your heart and start disengaging with conditioned mind. And it's really pretty remarkable the spaciousness that starts to kind of gradually move in to life. And like you say, it also really helps to prioritize. You know, you can get rid of the stuff that maybe that you're addicted to, or, you know, that has some kind of karmic pull that actually really doesn't support you.
Exactly, exactly. And then, you know, having the experience of that over time, I start to understand that process more and trust my experience to know that, you know, I will have enough time and this is important and I'm going to do it now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now is the only time we do anything, isn't it?
Now is the only time we ever do everything. And so I did this recording, and what I noticed afterwards was that what I had done was not exactly the assignment, but more of kind of appreciation and less sort of reassurance.
Okay.
So it was a little bit more on the content level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was listening to that for a while, and I realized that it wasn't really, didn't seem to be getting at the core of what was being pointed at. And so it was really helpful to notice that.
Let me see if I'm with you, Michael. So as you might, I'm just kind of making up an example here.
Yep.
What you mean by it's more, it's not so much a reassurance, it's more, it could be something like maybe you've got something you feel bad about that you did. And so you might come in with some reassurance about how, it wasn't really all that bad and it really turned out okay. Is that kind of what you mean?
No, it was more like, I appreciate you, Michael, because you do a good job with your family and you work hard at work and you're committed to practice and like that. And I think what the assignment was pointing at was, I project, more like a reassurance of, Michael, I'll never leave you. I'll always be there for you. I'll never abandon you, which to me sort of points more at the process.
Yeah, it's a really important distinction. You know, actually, the example you used is really the same thing that I said. It's just on the other side of the continuum.
Yes.
Instead of dealing with something negative, you're kind of, you know, you're starting off on a positive place. But both of those are, they're conditional, aren't they, in a way?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's subtle because it's not, that appreciation is there, but there's a because that goes with it. You know, I appreciate you, Michael, because, you know, of this and this and that.
Oh, right.
And I think what you saw was there's nothing, I mean, that's great. I mean, to bring that kind of appreciation to our life, that's super. I mean, we love that. That's wonderful. But there's another step back even more where, and this I think is what you're calling a reassurance, where it does not depend on anything outside at all. You know, you could be out there just flailing and creating havoc and, you know, destroying the world with whatever you're doing, and it wouldn't matter. You know, the appreciation would still be there for this being Michael who's in the middle of all that.
Yes, which of course, as you're saying, that is the beauty of practice, is that it's unconditional.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's that's neat. I'm glad you brought that up because it is such an important distinction to make. You know, because there is, you know, a lot of times we talk around, when we do this kind of thing, we talk around here about, you know, the difference between these things that you were asked to put on the tape. You're calling them reassurances. That's also what generally we call them here. The difference between that and affirmations. You know, where you're trying to, in an affirmation, you're kind of trying to convince yourself that something's true that, you know, may or may not be true.
Right.
But with reassurance, it's more like it's a statement of truth. You know, say something like, I'll never leave you, Michael. I mean, that's a true statement. The place from that comes from, that's what it is. It is that which will never leave the being.
Yeah. Wow, that's big.
Mm-hmm. It is big. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course, it's exactly what we're all looking for. And it's exactly, you know, that kind of reassurance. You can put lots of other words onto it too. You know, loving kindness, compassion, recognition is a big one. You know, a lot of people feel, you know, in the way that they grew up and learned how to survive, like they've never been seen. Actually, nobody's ever seen them for who they are. You know, so there's a lot of different kind of elements to it, but it's all what we're looking for, and it's all what we suffer in the absence of. You know, we go to the voices because that feels like the only place we have to go. Once we realize that there is this other place that the reassurances are coming from, that there's a place of compassion that exists for us that we can go to, then we have another choice. We don't have to live in a world of survival and then ultimately feeling bad about ourselves all the time.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Dave, thanks so much for the class. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for your participation, Michael. It's great.
Hi.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Rebecca.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hi. I wanted to talk about my experience of the assignment.
Okay, super.
And it's going to be kind of hard to do because I think I went unconscious a few days ago and have just been sort of like, I don't know, I feel like a surfer who was, you know, on the surfboard and then got a really big wave.
Uh-huh. Just kind of got pounded, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those where you're kind of, you realize you're in it, but, you know, it's just, it's kind of all you can do to claw your way back up onto the beach.
Yeah, and make and get on the phone call tonight.
Yeah.
And
well, of course,
of course,
and that is absolutely the best thing you could possibly do, right? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. that's the equivalent of, you know, somebody, you know, suddenly the, what do they call those? Well, I guess the lifeguards, you know, the lifeguards sitting there on the beach, you know, there's somebody else there, you know, there's a boat, there's a life ring, you know, there's something outside of you that is more powerful than conditioned mind that you can align yourself with to sort of pull you out of it.
So helpful. Yeah. So there are a couple of things that I would like to talk about. The second one is, you know, going unconscious. But the first one is actually doing the first part of the assignment, and that making the recording and you know, finding out what was going to be on the recording through the exercise of writing down everything conditioning was saying to me, and then writing down everything that that I truly need to hear.
Uh-huh.
And it was really fascinating going through that because conditioning had a lot to say, and then it had stuff to say about what the mentor was saying, what I truly want to hear. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it wanted to do was trying to control the what the mentor was saying to me by putting on like this helpful voice.
Uh-huh, I bet it was.
Yeah. It was, and one thing that it said to me that I was so, just so ecstatic to even hear was, it was trying to tell me not to be specific about content that's going on for me. It was trying to tell me not to really use the language of the content that was going on. It was trying to tell me to just pretty much stick with, I love you and I'm here for you.
Uh-huh. So
and,
maybe kind of keep it watered down enough that maybe it won't actually have an impact.
Right. So it wouldn't really penetrate the heart of the issues that that affect me. And so when it said that, I was like, I was really fortunate to even recognize that it wasn't coming from center. And then I was like, oh, okay, I'll be super specific. So I got really specific. And the impact that had was so huge. I ended up spending so much time with myself around it, and it was just so deep. Like a part of me really wanted to hear that even though this is true, and even though this is happening, and even though all of these things that are content oriented are happening, I love you anyway, and I'm going to be here for you anyway. And that while you're going through it, I'm here with you anyway.
Yeah, that's so great because it's like it bridges. I was curious what you meant by specific, and that explains it. You know, it bridges the world that we live in with the kind of the world of the compassion we were just talking about with Michael that lives inside, you know, because there's all the content, and it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I think that it doesn't matter what's going on, what happened, how you did that, how people responded to this or that. It just doesn't matter. You are absolutely loved no matter what. No matter what's going on outside.
Yeah, and a huge part of the content is the stuff that always gets me to go unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And just gets me right in the clutches of conditioning. So it was sort of like conditioning was saying, don't think about that too much. Don't really look at that because that's my realm, and I want you to stay unconscious around it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Sort of my.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
My
you are messing with conditioning's little program.
Yeah.
You know, it has this whole thing set up. You know, that's how it works. It has these structures set up, and they've been set up for so long, and they happened when we were so little, we have no idea they're actually there. You know, so probably your whole life, whenever you have headed in this direction that you went in, of attempting to somehow make peace with whatever was going on in your life, you know, there's this structure there that says, no, you can't do that. And it, you know, it tells you why. It tells you why in a way that's really believable. It turns your attention away and then just heads you off in a direction that's completely opposite the direction that you need to go into.
Absolutely.
So what happened was you were heading in that direction, but you were looking for it. And you were paying attention to it. You saw the structure. You realized, oh, that needs have no power over you.
Mm-hmm.
You can just say, no thanks, and go right to the place where conditioning is trying to keep you from.
Right, and the structure is currently happening in my life. It's been slowly building for the last month. All this content that typically just knocks me right unconscious, and I mean, even in the last few days has been very, I've seen myself get busier and busier and more invested in this particular aspect of my conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Do you have what's your off-the-hip guess of why it's happening right now?
Because of this assignment.
Don't you think?
The big hint for me, the big clue was that in the assignment it said, here's, you know, a clue that conditioning will probably come at you really hard once you start this assignment. Mm-hmm. And it really did. And it's tricky to identify because it just starts coming so fast, and the stupid dust thing is huge for me.
Yeah. If you're going along with the program and those systems are intact and they're not being threatened in any way, you know, conditioning actually has very little it has to do to keep you, you know, sort of positioned where it wants you, where it can just basically siphon off your life energy and cause you to suffer, but kind of keep you going enough that it can, you know, have a good meal every once in a while.
Right.
You know, so it's not really, you know, it's no big deal. And so it doesn't have to really hit you with anything big. It's just kind of, it's doing the sort of the suffering maintenance program with you.
Yes.
But you start turning your attention to it, which is the number one wrong thing to do from conditioning's point of view. Because, of course, that's how you're going to be free of it. Then it's going to say, whoa, hang on, the game has changed. Somebody changed the rules.
Right.
We need to pull out the big guns and hit her with something big and take her out. And, of course, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to get hit with it so hard that you make a decision to never look again.
Mm.
You know? I mean, and that's what, you know, it tries to just kind of snow you under. You know, it'll do stuff like it'll say, oh, God, this is bad. I mean, boy, I am in a bad state now. Look at me. I mean, this awareness practice is causing nothing but trouble. And then just kind of, well, I think I'll take up backgammon instead, you know? Anything to kind of pull your attention away from it so that you won't, so you're not in the position to see what it's doing to you.
Oh, gosh, it's so true. It's exactly what's been happening. And each day it's like a different tactic. And today was actually the one you just said with like, oh, this is so hard. And I don't know what day we were told to do these columns or what, but I just keep doing these columns every day. I find them so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I added it to the column where I'm saying what conditioning is saying. And it was just like, oh, I'm so tired. Oh, I just want to just stop all this. And just going on and on. And then the next column is the mentor column.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you are so in the driver's seat right now. I hope you'll consider continuing to up the ante even after the class ends. You know, continue.
Oh, yeah, I want to.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, it you know, normally when somebody is just walking around having an unconscious life like most people are, then conditioned mind is completely in the driver's seat. It's pulling it's calling all the shots, it's directing the attention all the time. You know, it can just take you wherever you want to go because you're essentially powerless because you don't even know it's there. That's how, you know, when we start, all of us started at some point like that. But if you start actively turning your attention to it, it ends up in a really bad space because it can't not act. You know, it can't just let you be happy because that's that is going to be just devastating. If you start having experiences of what life is like outside of the voices, then, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's going to be out of a job really quick. So it has to act, but it's kind of stuck because it has to act in an environment where you're paying attention. So like you said, every day it's throwing something new at you. So that's every day you have a new opportunity to see how it caused you to suffer. So every day you have a chance to see that, and it loses.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't like it.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the key thing you've caught on to is it's just the voices. You know, that's all that's going on. It's just conditioned mind. Even, you know, it says, oh, I'm so tired of this. I don't want to do this anymore, or whatever it says to you. You know, you probably mm-hmm. buy that sometimes and get involved in it. But a lot of times it sounds like you don't. And so, you know, you've caught on to the fact that there's a choice to be made between, you know, what these voices are telling you and the road that they want you to walk down and this whole other possibility that is, you know, not a part of conditioned mind at all.
Yeah, that makes me think of the letter that Sherry just sent. And in it, she talks about this non-attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about something that was really helpful to me in this regard, and it was it's a place where my conditioning takes me a lot, where my conditioning likes to sort of rationalize what I'm doing with it, and saying that I can find spiritual practice in these karmic pull sorts of things.
Oh yes, right. Yeah, like there's nothing wrong with engaging these behaviors. I can do spiritual practice. They can be my spiritual practice. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And in the letter, she talks about just how this one guy, I can't remember his name, and he would let that thing go. Like, oh, I'm seeing that this takes me away from my heart. It's taking me away from what I've experienced is possible just in this. In taking very good care of myself. And it feels like a karmic pull, and maybe this is something good to set aside and come back to this other way that really feels nourishing to me.
Yeah, and it's inspiring to hear a story about somebody with that kind of clarity, because, of course, that's what we're all looking for, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the willingness, the clarity and the willingness together, you know, to see what we really want for ourselves, that's
right.
The clarity part, and then the willingness to say, and this is often the hard part, the willingness to say, I choose what I really want, instead of I choose the old patterns that feel so, in a kind of an odd way, so comfortable, but don't take care of me at all. Actually, quite the opposite, you know, that they're ruining our lives.
And I feel like with this assignment and the particular content that I'm going through, I feel like I go through my karmic pull stuff repeatedly, all the time in life. I mean, it always comes up, and it just feels so much like getting to experience times of center. I have some basis for comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
So I can almost say to myself, oh, I really don't want to go with that karmic pull, because the other is just so much more for me.
Yeah, you have the experience of it. And so that experience draws you to what you really want.
Mm-hmm. And the karmic pull thing just seems so hollow.
Yeah, it becomes less and less attractive as we more and more find the alternative to it.
And this is the most conscious I've been in this particular content ever.
Yeehaw! Well, don't give up. Don't quit. Don't let them talk you out of it, because you know they will, especially as the class ends. But, you can do that through those assignments indefinitely. You know, I'm actually going to encourage everybody who's willing for it to keep going. You know, keep going with the tape or the recording. You know, keep going with these acts of kindness, that we're doing for ourselves. Because, you know, that's the work. That is what will keep this whole possibility in focus. That and on all the other ways that are available to participate in practice.
Yeah, it's really good to have those assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to keep going with them.
Yeah, we have to have a kind of a way to do it.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca.
Hi, Dave. This is Janet.
Hey, Janet.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the second part of the assignment,
super,
the acts of kindness.
Uh-huh.
And that was the hardest part for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually kind of surprised at that. And what happened was, I think it was the first day after you had sent the assignment. It was like almost the end of the day, and it was like an afterthought. Oh my gosh, I'm supposed to do some act of kindness. know? like looking around, like, what can I do? I don't even know what to do. I don't know how to, you know, what do I, it was like what came up was, what do I want? You know, what do I want for myself? And it was, you know, as though that stupid dust just fell heavily. Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know what I want for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then my husband asked me if I wanted to go climb up this mountain. And so we were hiking, and all of a sudden I just stopped, and I just took in where I was, and I, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like I just brought everything in. I said, oh, my God, here it is right here.
Yeah, right there. That's what you wanted.
That was it. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh, that's it. It's just stopping and bringing everything into me. You know, bringing life in right there, that second.
Yeah, I love how simple that is.
It was so simple, and it was so beautiful, and it was so profound, and I loved that it was, you know, that I really got it, because then it linked up with, oh, this is kindness to myself.
Yes.
It was so deep.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I just kept moving with that for the next few days. And then today I was like, you know, I really want to buy myself some flowers.
Uh-huh.
And by the time I got, you know, ready to do it, I thought it was too late and I wouldn't be able to, you know, nothing would be open. But then somebody told me about a place that was still open. So I made the effort to go out of my normal routine and out of my way to go get that for myself.
Yeah, isn't that great?
And then I came home and I just sat there and I set them up and I put them there and I just looked at them and I just stopped, you know, and just like took it in. And that's just, I guess, what it felt like to me. The whole process of it was just taking it in.
Just taking
being there with being there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being present.
Yeah. And of course, nobody in your whole universe deserves it more than you do.
Yeah, and I really felt that, and I got that, and it was just really lovely. And conditioning would have had me miss the whole thing. Because,
of
like,
course.
You don't know, you can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like, you know how to do this for other people, but you don't know how to do it for yourself. And
mm-hmm.
da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was sitting there today, I was thinking that, you know, it seems to me like, ego wants to be somebody, you know, and center just wants to be nobody.
Yeah, and you can really see why, I imagine, in your experience with the flowers. Because what I am projecting when you say, you know, you're taking it in, you know, identity dissolves in that. You
yes.
know, you know how, you know, it's actually kind of a trite expression anymore, you know, to become one with. You know, people make a lot of jokes about that and stuff. But it actually really does describe the experience in a way. You know, because normally we walk so much around as separate identities in these thinking relationships with everything around us, where we're labeling everything, we're putting things in categories, we're basically making it so we don't have to have any experience of anything other than our thoughts of those things. And when you were describing, you know, being with the flowers, or just, you know, like on the hike stopping, I was just imagining, you know, all of that kind of, I don't know what the best image would be, but like kind of like a veneer that gets smeared over everything, or, you know, like a veil in between the person and all the beauty that's around, that, you know, you stop and then kind of brush that aside, and you actually get to take in all of the goodness that's there that normally conditioning is, you know, is keeping away from you.
Yes, yes, that's it. Because I wrote something down then, and what I had written down was just pure awareness,
mm-hmm.
just awareness, just experience, just, you know, write that. And then the other one is like something meaning something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's sort of like what you're saying.
Oh, I see. You're just talking about the two different, yeah, the two different worlds, right?
Yeah, there's just something, you know, out there. Maybe it's that you're more in your head, you're trying to figure it all out, and then you just drop into it.
Yeah, so in the state of awareness, it's like there's nobody there. There's nothing there but awareness. And,
yeah.
You know, you could say, and the appreciation of that, and you know, the heart opening to that. You know, that's all kind of a part of center. And then, you know, the other alternative, which is much more familiar and but not a part of, so separate from everything, where we're putting meaning on everything, and in that meaning, you know, kind of separating us from it and being somebody in a relationship with it, and then just destroying all of the joy that can be in a relationship with life as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really well said. That is it. And when it first happened and I couldn't figure out what to do, yeah, there was like this sense of, you know, failure and, God, you don't even know how to be nice to yourself. And
yeah, that's the reality the voices would have you live in instead
yeah.
of what you actually found, where there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, you don't even know what you want. And
gosh,
you can't even do the assignment. And
yeah.
And but when all that drops, it's right there.
Yeah, and it's good to know, isn't it, that's how simple it is, and that's a possibility. You know, it's a quick trip to center. We actually just had this experience here. We're doing a retreat here right now. Sherry is doing a retreat with us, and that was one of our assignments a couple of days ago. It was something similar. You know, we went outside, and we were just kind of looking at stuff. And I was walking around, and there's all these flowers growing around here. There's some wildflowers now and also some flowers we planted, and they're little bitty things. And, you know, I realized I had never taken the opportunity. They just come out. You know, I haven't taken the opportunity to really see, to meet these people, sort of. They're kind of like people to me a little bit, and see what they're all about. And so I was looking at them and smelling them. And, boy, I mean, talk about a heart-opening, immediate heart-opening avenue. You know, just to see a flower, to really look at it and really see it for what it is. Not think about it, you know.
Yes.
Not like categorize it, but really be with it and see it. It's just a quick trip to exactly what we're looking for.
Right. And then I like the added part of just knowing that in doing that, what I'm giving to myself.
Yes. Say more.
Well, it's like, okay, so you stop and you smell the flowers and you're taking it all in, and then you remember that this is some, you know, that you're, in doing that, you're nurturing yourself, you're giving to yourself, you're loving yourself in the process of opening to what it is.
Yeah, it's so true. There's something very mysterious there that we really can't talk about in words. You implied it a few minutes ago when you talked about, you know, trying to find the flower shop that was still open. And you said, I think you said you made the effort to go and do that.
Yes.
And it's interesting that I don't even know if I can point at what's at the mystery. It's like we are that that experience comes from being open and receptive. You know, we can't do it, and yet that there is that within us which can make that kind of decision and make that kind of effort for the being who we are. You know, but it's that's not really us either. It's like it's all coming from the same place.
Yeah. Yeah, I do know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was that was really very powerful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
So I just wanted to report on that.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Janet. Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Dave. This is Nancy.
Hey, Nancy.
I wanted to talk about something you said in a call a while ago. You called something a suffering maintenance program.
Uh-huh.
And gosh, I think you put a name to what I've been looking at for the last few weeks. And what I've been looking at are the voices that are kind of underground, and they don't really say anything. But I'll pass the mirror and I'll make a grimace, or I'll do a deep sigh. And you know, there's no words to it. But if I were to put words to those sensations or the feelings, you know, that come up, it would be a bit of self-hate, I know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like there's a meaning, an invisible meaning there that's implied that you're sort of looking for as you go about your day.
Right. So there's nothing big happening. I'm kind of on my own, and you know, it's very quiet around here for the most part. And so nothing big happens, but there are movements and sensations in the body that if I put words to them, it is definitely something negative, and that I could respond with a reassurance.
Mm-hmm. Did you try that?
Interesting. And what I'm seeing is that it is like a suffering maintenance program, in that it's kind of like this underground, maybe low impact self-hate. I don't know if any self-hate could be low impact, but it just feels that way, and it's just kind of keeping its place until something big comes up, and then it can really rev up, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're being softened up all the time. You know, it's always sort of preparing the ground. It's making sure you don't feel completely good about yourself. It's not hitting you with anything big, because maybe that might be a little too obvious, or, you know, maybe it doesn't even really need to do it, because it's kind of got you on that maintenance program. But then every once in a while, it'll take advantage of some opportunity to really let you have it, to make sure that, you know, it's going deep enough that you're not gonna question the, you know, the story that it's telling you.
Right, exactly. So I just think that's kind of interesting, and it, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's always I mean, I can see it, I can feel it when it comes up, just by, you know, checking in with the body, which is, I think, really interesting.
Yeah,
for me.
I think it's very interesting also. Now, one little tip for you, if you want to kind of take this to the next level, which is that there always is a voice.
Yeah.
Now, you may not be hearing the voice. You know, you're seeing it now on the level of the meaning there. Like you walk by the mirror and you have that, you know, that grimace. You know, there's a meaning there that's implied. You might not be able to hear what the voices are saying at this point to set that up, but I can guarantee you that that's what's happening, that somewhere back behind your eyeballs there, where you can't see it, you know, there's a conversation happening. There's actually language happening that's setting all that up and creating that meaning that you're projecting as you're walking around.
Right. Well, that's what I've been doing with my columns these past few weeks is, you know, there was one day that I was totally exhausted, you know, and there was this, I would say, it wasn't really a voice, but there was this overall feeling there's something wrong with me. So I went to the other side and said, okay, what do I need to hear? And then, you know, there was someone who said, well, let's just go for a walk. And, you know, if you want, you can read all day. We'll walk to the library, get you a book, and then you can read, you know. Or, you know, it's like the fact that I woke up one day and thought, you know, I have the whole day here just by myself. I'm all alone. It went from all by myself to being all by my, you know, all alone.
Wow, yeah,
and but it shifted after I started thinking about the self-talk, and it's like, well, no, I'm not all alone. I'll be with you, and I'll take care of you, and we can do something fun today. And we actually made a list of the fun things that I could do, you know. So this has been a really good exercise with the columns, because all these sensations and all these feelings that are happening without the words, I've been putting words to and then coming up with reassurances for them.
Yeah, that's great. And if you're inclined to continue with this, which I hope you will be, what I'd recommend is, you know, keep up with those reassurances, because that's what's going to support you through all this. And turn your attention more and more to those words that you're discovering. You know, if you get this sense, you know, there's a message there that the voices are saying, you know, there's something wrong with you. What? What's wrong with me? You know, this is the place to get specific. You know, what exactly is conditioning saying? You know, if you notice yourself on the level of the meaning, like, you know, you like look in the mirror, you see the grimace, there's a meaning there. See if you can back it up to how the voices are actually constructing that meaning. You know, what are they actually saying? the reason for that is if you can back it up that other level, then you'll just have that much more power, because you'll see it before all that meaning actually gets created.
So I will see it before the sensation hits, do you think, or
not before? Well, it's not really before the sensation hits. You know, the reason I'm hesitating is because we draw a distinction between what we call movement, which is just kind of like the movement of life in the body, and sensation, which is sort of, you know, the next response to that. You know, what generally happens is, you know, there's that sensation that goes on. It's a response to something. It could be a response to something conditioned mind has said. It could be something that happens in the environment. And then conditioning jumps on that and has a thought about it, or makes some kind of comment about it. And it's supposed to take your attention away from the sensation towards the meaning that thought.
Okay, so
creates.
So I pass the mirror, and there's a movement. Is that where the movement would come in?
Yeah, so perhaps you're just going along being in your life. And
yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pass the mirror, and it's like the grimace comes. Well, first there would be the movement, and then the grimace would be the sensation, I would think,
yeah,
the reaction to the sensation.
Yeah.
And then
well, the point I'm making is that when you're at the grimace point, it's already done it to you.
Right. Exactly.
It's back there working all the time. I mean, probably what it's doing is, you know, you're having lots of sensations just as you go about in your life, and it's tagging on to those. It's creating, you know, putting thoughts and labels and stuff onto those, where in a place you can't see it outside of your awareness, and creating this world. Like, so for me, like in that kind of situation, it might be, you know, I'm just going along, and, you know, kind of back here, conditioning might be, let's say, creating a program that I'm not good enough, say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's playing off of the sensations that are in the body. But that's, you know, if I'm not aware of that, then I'm not gonna know that's happening at all. I'm not probably not even gonna know that those voices are back there talking to me about how I'm not good enough.
Exactly.
You know? So I might be going along, and then something happens where maybe something doesn't go quite the way that I want it to or whatever, and immediately, this is the equivalent of you see yourself in the mirror, immediately all that meaning kind of comes crashing in. It's been there all the time. I've been believing it the whole time without realizing it. But now here's the place where, okay, it's proven to me. Oh, I really am not good enough. And what that does is it keeps the attention out on, you know, what I need to do in order to be a better person, and it keeps the attention away from how in the world is this idea that I'm not good enough being created? What,
mm-hmm.
what are the voices saying to actually cause that world to exist for me, even though it's absolutely unreal and not true?
Right. Well, that's very good. That really stood up for me as far as I've been just wondering about these underground voices. And
yeah, it's good practice too. It's very tangible. And, you know, if you can keep writing it down, writing it down really helps, because it kind of gets it out. You have to really look in order to write it down. So
right.
If you keep doing that, I think what you'll find is you'll be able to uncover it at more and more subtle levels. You'll be able to see more and more specifically how it's creating the story that it wants you to live in, so that it can manipulate you and cause you to feel bad.
Right, right.
And the more you see that, of course, the more you can wake up to that and realize that it's just the voices. It's just a bunch of hooey. It has nothing to do with you, and there's really no cause to suffer at all.
Exactly. Oh, wonderful. Well, this has been very helpful.
Good. Yeah, it's fun. This is it's a really fun.
I loved it when you said the suffering maintenance program, because I don't know what you meant by that, but it sure hit me like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking at, I think.
Yep, that's it.
Great.
Thanks,
well, thank
Nancy.
You so much, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, this is Jeffrey.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Hi. I noticed while doing the exercises that there's a part of me that almost all, well, one great thing that I saw was that I've been carrying around this belief for a very, very long time that if I do practice right, the voices will leave me alone.
Yeah. And have
and
you?
So I'm
have
constantly
you,
trying to do it just for that.
Do you have enough experience with it to see how untrue that is?
Yeah.
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 Because of course they never will they? They'll never leave you alone.
It doesn't seem like it. No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like there's. Well, part of what the reassurances can be for me is talking to that part that has his role in trying to be good enough.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What kind of things do you say to him, if you don't mind me asking?
No, not at all. But you don't have to do stuff like that. We can do something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Does he like to hear stuff like that it's not important to you if he, you know, gets it right? Stuff like that?
Yeah, well, definitely emphasizing that there's not, that it's not, our relationship is not contingent on something happening, a goal or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like we were talking about that earlier in the call.
Yeah.
And when you're mentoring him in that way, what happens to the voices?
Well, they're certainly diminished. Their abilities, their scope is diminished. And it's really interesting because I'm not trying to diminish them at that point.
Yeah, if you were trying to diminish them, you would be supporting their reality. And they
right inside what they want to do,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that would be more of the same. You would be just creating another way to believe the voices. But here, you're actually turning your attention away from the voices to this part of you who needs some, sounds like some love and attention. And in that, you notice that the voices, they don't completely go away, but they diminish. They kind of fade back into the background.
Yeah, and there's really, what's really been interesting is noticing some of the subtleties of somebody who doesn't want to let go of stuff like that. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. A lot of times, you'll have to look and see, a lot of times that's not even really a someone. You know, it's not the same as maybe that part of, that guy who's trying to get it right and, just really needs, he doesn't want to, but just needs some reassurance, somebody to tell him that he's actually okay and help him understand that. You know, there is within us this thing. This is what we actually call conditioned mind, rather than kind of the parts of ourselves. This thing that does want to suffer is not interested in the reassurances, is not interested in having a different life experience. It's only interested in draining the life energy of the being into suffering.
Yeah, well, it definitely feels more habitual than genuine, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like a habit.
Yeah.
It's a habit that's probably, not even probably, it's the hardest habit that there is to break, I'm sure. Because our addiction to suffering, it's funny to talk about it in that way because, you normally don't think of being addicted to suffering. You think of being addicted to something that you actually like, even if it's bad for you. But we're addicted to suffering. It's the hardest habit in the entire universe, as far as I can tell, to break. And I think it's because of what you're saying. It's there is this thing inside that we believe is me. In quotes, this thing is me. I want this, and it'll never say I want to suffer. It'll say I want to go down this road. It's a suffering road. You might even know it's a suffering road, but, that condition says, I want this because this is what I know. This is what I am. I am suffering. And to realize that that is not who we are, and this is like we were talking about earlier, find the willingness to choose who we, in a much quieter place, discover ourselves to be. It takes a lot of willingness. It takes a lot of guts, too. A lot of courage to make that movement.
Yes. One thing I noticed while doing the exercise is that I have that way of trying to be part of me anyway, has that way of trying to be good enough, and that I do that in a whole lot of other places too, not just how I approach practice, but...
Yeah, which is good to know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been looking a lot this week at the difference between process and content, and that's what you're seeing there. That it's the same process, of, not sure exactly what word to put to it. You know, you could even say self-abandonment if you could do that without any self-hatred. But you know,
mm-hmm.
this is the process by which you're talked into leaving what's here, and all of the, you know, the joy. And also kind of the, I can't think of the right word, but like the nurturing or the, you know, the even the kind of the nourishment of what's here for this being who we are. That's how you get talked, one of the ways you get talked into leaving that for a story that the voices are telling you that will cause you to suffer. You do it in one place, you do it in lots of places. And it's great to see because you can see this is, it takes away the reality of the stuff out there that it's pointing to. You know, it's not about spiritual practice. You didn't mention what the other things are, but it's not about, say, relationship or the job or whatever else you might feel like you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's about suffering. It's about maintaining a relationship with a conditioned mind. And for us, you know, people who want to end that relationship, it's about turning the attention away from that karma, turning it back to the moment, and, you know, seeing what needs to be done. You know, seeing who needs to be taken care of right now.
Yes. Yeah, it's really important to see it that way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crucial. It's crucial because otherwise we just spend our time confused, chasing after a dream that is always off in the future somewhere or always in some other place. You know, someday I'll be happy. Someday I'll have what I want. There it is. It's just right around the corner. If I just go a little faster, in your case, if I just am a little bit more, can't think of how to say it, more good enough, if I can be enough of who I'm supposed to be, then I'll catch up with that thing. It'll be mine, and I will be happy for the rest of my life. Never going to happen.
Yes. Well, and there's this, I've finally seen, there's this impulse to take that information and put it right back into trying to be better.
Uh-huh.
So now I have this thing where I try to be better, and now I have to fix that.
Right. If I can just be better at not being better, then everything...
And not trying to be, whatever. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah.
It's sneaky, isn't it? Yeah, it keeps on backing up. Luckily, what we have going for us is, you know, we have to back up, too. You know, I'm in it. I'm going to back up and see what's going on. And I step right back into something else. Oh, God, now I'm in this other thing. We might step back in. But the advantage we have is that if we keep backing up, we'll end up eventually in center where we can see what's going on. Conditioning can never do that. You know, conditioning doesn't exist in center. In that grace happens where we back up that one more time that it can back up. We step into this place where, like people have been talking about on the call, where we realize that the whole thing is made up. There actually is nothing to suffer over. Everything's perfectly okay right now. And there's all the love and the kindness and the compassion and the, you know, peace, everything else that we're looking for right here. And then we realize that, it's all life just comes down to a choice between believing the voices and living here where the voices don't exist to whatever degree we're willing and able to do that.
Yeah, there are tough times when it feels... Well, it used to be when it felt like I couldn't back up far enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I have such gratitude for knowing that it is possible. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All we have to do is keep practicing. Yeah. Because we can, you know, that can be used in the same way, you know, with the other stuff you're talking about. If I can only back up enough.
Right.
You know, if I can only do this practice enough, then I will have what I want. And it's just the same thing in a completely different outfit. It's compelling because it's a Zen outfit. But it's still the same old process.
Yeah.
But all we really have to do, this is you know, really the good news, you know, we just have to show up and do the practice. You know, we keep bringing our attention back. We meditate. We learn how to keep the focus of our attention here. And almost unintentionally, kind of like you said a minute ago with your relationship with this you know, this guy who feel like he's not good enough that you're working on. You said you didn't, it's not like you even tried to do that, tried to make the voices go away. You just kind of, you know, you just put your attention there. It kind of happened. You know, in the same way, we just keep showing up, and bit by bit, we watch ourselves change.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's good that it's that way.
Yep. Very kind.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jeffrey.
Hi, Dave. It's Celia.
Hey, Celia.
Hi. Thank you so much for this wonderful class.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for being a part of it.
Oh, glad to. I have had an interesting experience just in the last few hours before the class. In general, I've had the opportunity just to have a lot of practice supports, which has been wonderful. I've been catching up on some podcasts of reflective listening support calls and archives and things. Yeah, and the consequence of that, and including the exercises for the class, are I've just been squaring off with, it feels like, squaring off with huge pieces of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really wonderful, except just before the class, it was sort of like the kicker was I was a little busy and unconscious, and I didn't get to do the exercises until really this morning, and I had planned to do it last night.
Mm-hmm.
But the mentor made it really okay because I had lots of time to listen to the recording, and I did the recording, and I even had time to participate in my very favorite thing in the world, even during my work day, which is quilting.
Oh,
and
great. That was the kind thing you did for yourself?
Yes, yes. And it was really a treat because it takes me a little while to set up for it and be able to do it. And I have a big story about how I'm stuck in my job and blah, blah, blah. So it was, you know, really like the term squaring off is really hits the nail on the head as far as conditioning and my time and being able to do kind things for myself.
Yeah, and I hope, don't forget where you're going, Celia, but I hope other people on the call will really get that too, that it is a part of the deal, especially when we start doing stuff that's, you know, as threatening as what you guys have been doing. And because, you know, these assignments go right to the heart of, you know, how we suffer and how we can end our own suffering. And so to expect that there will be a squaring off with conditioning that will come as a result of that, and if, like we were talking earlier with some people, if we find ourselves, you know, kind of getting snowed under or really struggling with some big pieces of conditioning, or, you know, that's good. That's a sign that we're engaged and we're heading in the right direction, not what the voices might say, which is a sign that, you know, we're in trouble and we're heading the wrong way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I've even found energy to do something kind or go through something simply because I know it will just be the worst thing for conditioning in that moment.
Uh-huh.
And that was today. It's like if I set up that sewing machine at my lunch break and I get on there, it'll like seal the deal.
Yeah, but that's a fun motivation. It sounds kind of masochistic, but it's not. I mean, because what really upsets conditioning is kindness. And taking care of ourselves. So it's really fun how we can, you know, really take care of ourselves and, you know, kind of stick at a conditioning every once in a while too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it fits with a giant piece of karma about the role of work in my life and in my family, and a job as a ball and chain. So, you know, here I am, work day, being able to clear time, still get my work done,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera. So about just like, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through the time I had set aside, I got this tidal wave of what I'll call sort of like the big guns that conditioning takes out when all else fails. And
mm.
it's a flood of feeling depressed.
Mm.
And I'm one of those who, like, I came to practice out of suffering over situations of feeling afraid and hurt and angry, and depression is one of those things that just like lays like so far off, and it's as if when all else fails,
mm-hmm.
it comes over me. And I've been trying to kind of a little bit reflect on it while other people were talking about their experiences of kindness and the exercise, and there are words, something to the effect of, if and these aren't exactly practice words, of course, because it's conditioning, but if you solve your problems or if you don't suffer anymore, you won't have anything, sort of like you won't have anything to feel good about because you won't be able to look forward to that problem being solved. Like, I guess it's the inverse of what Jeffrey was talking about.
Well, that's a twisted argument, isn't it?
Oh, so much so.
Yeah, you can't end suffering because if you do, then you won't have these little glimpses every once in a while of what it might be possible in suffering when you finally get past some kind of problem and are getting ready to fall into the next one.
Absolutely. Like, the anticipation is the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So we always need to have that. My sister and I used to talk about Christmas Eve. Like, you know, that's Christmas Eve. It's all about looking forward to Christmas Day, and you can barely remember Christmas Day beyond getting up because it's that spot. And it's also a big karmic story in my family of the idea of there's always like misery after misery, and it's like, oh, no, it's not that we're so miserable. It's that we need our misery.
Yeah, just so you can have a little piece of what you're actually looking for every once in a while.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so a part of how we cause ourselves to suffer. You know, people talk about that a lot with even something as simple as, you know, like maybe like ice cream or something, you know, where, you know, eating ice cream, well, that makes you a bad person, let's say. You know, that's what the voices are telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're also egging you on, saying, hey, there's some ice cream in the freezer. You know, no, you can't have any ice cream because that makes you a bad person. Yeah, but there's some ice cream in the freezer. And it's just kind of working you up and working you up. And what it's doing is working up a bunch of energy, you know, and it's, you know, you're no, I shouldn't do it. Yeah, but I'm going to do it. No, I shouldn't do it. And then finally, you know, the hand goes into the freezer, pulls out the ice cream. You know, here's the scoop. You get a little taste of it. There's this little, tiny little blip of joy, you know, because you're getting what you want, but it's a total setup. The moment you have the thing, conditioning comes in, the self-hate comes in, just to clobber you for it, and it, you know, basically you've proved once and for all, again, that you are a bad person. You can't be trusted. You know, you never should, you know, be allowed anywhere near anything, any good that you like because, you know, you don't deserve it. So it's like it has to give us those little blips of something good in order to kind of keep us going and keep us heading down this track to believe in that, you know, at some point it's going to be different and we actually are going to get what we want, not seeing that it's just part of a process that will go on endlessly if we don't do something about it.
Absolutely. And there's this false sense that it's the endless engagement in the process that is the goal. So the depression seemed to be kind of paired with, oh, no, I can't not have this going on. I mean, this is what I do. I have something to feel bad about. So I can look forward to it getting better.
Yeah. And it neglects the understanding that there are other processes that we can be engaged in. It's not like if the process of conditioned mind causing suffering were to end, there wouldn't be anything going on. You know, it's funny that we would believe that, but we do. You know, if you drop, this is what conditioned mind says, if you drop me and turn away from me, that'll be the end of your life.
Yes.
You know, there actually won't be anything there. You'll probably just, you know, you'll melt into a puddle on the floor, you know. But of course, that's not what is going on at all. Conditioning has no experience of what is outside of it. So it's always, you know, it can't tell you, and it wouldn't if it could, about, you know, the process of being engaged with life, you know, the process of receiving, we might say, all that life is offering all the time and every moment, the process of love, feeling loved and loving what's around us, the process of peace and just experiencing the, you know, the peace and the goodness and the safety that is in the moment. You know, all these wonderful processes that we can engage in and be a part of. We choose this other process of suffering because, you know, for a lot of us, until we've done a lot of practice, that's really all we know. But then, like people have been saying earlier in the call, we start having experience of these other possibilities. We start to get it that there's actually this little process of conditioned mind is tiny. It's nothing. It compared to what's available outside of it, it's minuscule. And, you know, we start to get glimpses of that, and then gradually we find the willingness to kind of test the waters and see, you know, is it true? Could we actually be safe outside of conditioned mind? Might we actually be happy if we let go of all this suffering?
So that's a story then conditioning is telling in that moment, and the net effect of that is this flood of depression, because it's speaking about its experience that you're not going to have any life afterwards, and someone's
mm-hmm.
obviously listening to that.
Somebody's believing that, probably. Yep, yep. And then it's perfect. It ties back with the sensation thing. So, you know, the voice says that. You believe it. There's a flood of emotion, which is just basically a flood of sensation in the body, and it's like that supports it. Oh, this must be true because I'm having this feeling.
Okay, yeah, and that's precisely what happened. Only when I got the flood of the feeling was when I woke up and realized, oh, I know I've felt this before.
Yeah.
This can only be one thing, kind of.
uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, and that's what we can learn to do in practice. That's neat that you were able to pull that off, because, you know, we can learn to use the things that are supposed to trigger us into suffering and self-hatred to trigger us into waking up and stepping out of conditioning. You know, just like you say, just by recognizing it. Hey, wait a second. I know what this is. I don't, you know, this is not something I have to believe. This is just conditioned mind. And then there you are. You step back. You're no longer in it, believing it. You're outside of it where you can see it.
I see. And see through it, ultimately.
See through it. And also, of course, that's the same place that the reassurances come from. So that's the place from which you can see the being. You know, there's a being there who is trapped in that suffering, who believes it. That's the place from which you can see that being and then, you know, push aside all of the voices, you know, say, no, thank you. You know, this is not helpful, and actually reach in and pull that person out of that world that she's living in.
Wow. Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca?
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Dave. This conversation has been very helpful in helping me see how ego talked me out of doing the assignments.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, and tried to really keep me quiet because, you know, since I didn't do my homework, I shouldn't talk, you know, that kind of thing. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what I saw was when I was reading the email with the assignment, it was almost like I was not, it just wasn't coming in, you know. I was reading it, but it wasn't registering. And when I look closely at what that pattern has been, is that there is this, it's not really the same as depression, but it's more like a listlessness
mm-hmm.
that seems to just kind of settle over me. And
does it feel like your energy is being tapped?
Absolutely drained through my feet, you know.
There you go. Yep.
And I can even know it's happening. Like, here's what's going on in my mind is I can hardly move. I cannot feel anything. And this is weird because I'm not tired. So I'm having this conversation. So I'm knowing this is all happening and it's conditioning. And yet, you know, I'm still, it's already done by that point.
Yeah, and do you have a sense of how it's doing it to you?
Well, I'm thinking, and I'm exploring with this, that I spend a lot of time trying to, like on the computer, checking emails, trying to find something to do. And so it's like it's scanning, trying to connect, kind of scanning out there for some little charge of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not there, if it doesn't get its fix, its charge, then it's like it just rolls over and dies. And that's what it's kind of taking me along. That's what my attention seems to be doing.
Right. So the voices will make sure ultimately that it doesn't get what the charge doesn't happen, right? It might let
mm-hmm.
you, going back to the earlier conversation, it might let you kind of get worked up a little bit over something, you
mm-hmm.
know, like kind of let that inner, because it's like there's this kind of creepy image that we use a lot of times to describe this where we talk about, you know, that we're kind of, it's kind of like we're a crop for
mm-hmm.
conditioning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You probably heard
yeah.
that. And, you know, so...
No, I've lived it.
yeah. Yeah, well, I think that's what you're describing, too. You know, but it has to, you know, it's like any, like a farmer will go out, you can't just, you know, you got to work the soil a little bit. You know, you got to make things happen. You got to feed the soil a little bit in order to get a return. It's the same thing with conditioning. You know, it's just like the ice cream thing. You know, you got to, it's got to give it to us. You know, give us a little of this, give us a little of this, get us worked up. You know, start to create something like hope inside
mm-hmm.
of us. Make
yeah.
it feel like, oh, maybe it's going to be okay this time. Maybe I'll
yeah.
actually get what I want. You know, maybe finally this need will be met, this ache will be taken care of that has been there for so long. And, like, it just makes us completely vulnerable in that way and has all of our energy out there and vulnerable and exposed. And then when it finally can't do that anymore, then it, you know, self-hate will come in, and basically there's the harvest. It just, you know, just cuts it down. It takes all that energy for itself. And then that's the experience of, oh, my gosh, I can't even move. The energy's just draining out my feet. You know, it's just, it has set you up and it's sucking you dry.
Yep, that's it. So what I'm looking at is then how, okay, so where do I really get sucked in? Where am I lost in all of this is kind of what's coming, the question that's coming up now. Because it seems like, I think it's the hope, you know, it's the charge, kind of like the ice cream, I think, that, yeah, that's it. That's the point where I just kind of follow it like a dog to a bone, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And somebody is choosing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, it probably doesn't feel a lot of times like a choice being made, but there's a choice being made there.
Yeah, no, I can see that it's a choice being made. Yeah, it's that indulging, okay, just this once more. I mean, it's not even that conscious. It's not near that conscious, but I can see that that's the essence of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like making a deal with the devil just this one more time.
Yeah,
you know?
Just, yeah, that's the classic line. Just
yeah.
one more time. Yeah, then I'll stop. You know, then I'll change my evil ways, but just this one more time. I just want one more taste of suffering before I let go.
Yeah, it's so sweet at the beginning, you know, kind of thing.
It is kind of, yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's karma, you know.
Yeah.
It's the world that we swam in for so long. It's just, it's really hard to give up.
Well,
and, you know,
and I see. Go ahead.
You know the way out of it, right?
I
don't
want to
take that question.
Right at this moment, I'm not.
Okay, I have a suggestion for you if you're open to it.
Please.
Do the assignment.
Yeah. Well, you know, every time you said, I hope you'll continue this after this class, I noticed something in me perked up.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and
I mean, it's perfect. You're looking for something to do. You know, you're looking for something that will connect you to what is, you know, and it's just, obviously, you just got that. You know, the irony in, you know, looking to do everything but the assignment is pretty classic.
Yeah.
But that will be the thing, won't it? I mean, I think that's probably why, you know, there's a little part of you perked up there because, you know, that is the thing. That will connect you. You know, that will connect you with you.
Yeah.
It won't connect you in the way your conditioning is presenting it, but it will connect you with you and your heart and what you really want for yourself. And, I think that that's what you truly want for yourself.
Yes.
The karma is just taking that, turning it into something that isn't it at all and then using it to cause you to suffer.
Well, and as I you were asking someone else, I don't remember the connection, but it's like, oh, I know, it's that looking for the emails and looking for those connections with relationships or people, whatever, that can be my cue. You know, that can be that conditioned little lure that turns me back, oh, I'm really wanting to connect with me.
Yeah, you've got this shaking finger reaching towards the on button on the computer.
Yeah, so
and,
funny. It's always on. It just is it's clicking always, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you're
yeah.
reaching for the mouse and say, wait a second, time out here, gang. What is going on? What am I choosing here right now? I don't think I'm choosing what I really want for myself. Yeah.
And you know, there
you can
was
play,
this
you can play little games with it too, where you know you take the mouse and go hide it someplace, or you know, so you have to go and get it, or you know, little things that put a big sign in front of your computer that says something like, "Are you sure?" You know,
no,
whatever.
You know what just occurred to me is put a big thick rubber band or ribbon around my computer to where I have to actually untie my laptop before I can open it.
Yep, there
you know?
Go. Yep, something that'll cause you to question. You know, okay, hang on a second. What am I doing here? Who's here? What am I choosing? Am I choosing ending suffering? Am I choosing what I really want? Am I choosing something else?
Yeah.
Because of course, you know what, you know the choice.
Yeah.
We all do. We really, it doesn't take very long to really get the choice that's there. It's just a matter of finding the willingness to choose it.
Well, and I tell you, that right at the beginning of the call, when you were kind of reviewing the assignment,
mm-hmm.
or asking one of the other callers, participants, about their kind thing that they did for themselves, there was this little sweet little part of me that was like, that kind of, that I saw real clearly, and it was like, oh, I could have done something kind for myself. And I thought, you know, and it was like I really was sad that I missed out on that for myself. And that's kind of the internal version of doing something for the love of others that we won't do for ourselves, because I feel, you know, in a way I really saw that part clearly, almost as if, you know, like it was another, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can do for her for that, for, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's a lot at stake, isn't there? There's a being, there's a life at stake.
Yeah,
you know, when we look at it that way, then you know, for me at least, that's a lot of times where the motivation can come from. I can't waste another minute. You know, there's a life at stake here. It happens to be my life, or we might say the life of this being that I'm involved with here. But you know, that's the most important thing in the universe. And you know, it may be it's time. You know, maybe it's time to make a different choice.
Yep. Don't have any. I don't have any time to lose. What am I waiting for? Is the question. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you too, Rebecca. Okay. Great. Well, gosh, we're out of time already. A couple of things before I let you go. That was an excellent segue. Actually, I want to give you your assignment for the rest of your life, which is to continue doing the work. For as long as you're willing for it, I would truly recommend. Continuing to work with the tape and adding to the tape, listening to the tape, stopping during the day, finding out what you want to hear. It's a practice. You know, it's something that you can carry off into your life for as long as you're willing to do it. And, you know, to do the assignment of looking for kind things to do for yourself. And also, at the same time, you've noticed probably over the course of this little class that there's always been the double element. You know, there's the element on the side of the possibility, like the kindness assignment. There's also the element of seeing what the voices are up to, because those two things go hand in hand. It's the awareness of what the voices are saying and what they're trying to talk us into. That awareness is what puts us in a place where we can choose the other possibility. So I hope you'll consider continuing with the work that we've done in the class, and I also hope you'll continue taking advantage of every possible support that you possibly can that come as a part of this practice. You know, like the radio show, if you're not a part of Reflective Listening Buddies, I would really encourage you to join that. It's a very powerful support for practice in the world. And retreats and workshops, books, CDs, everything that we've kind of got out there. And then a couple specific things to know about. I mentioned this first one last week. We've got what I think is going to be a really interesting, fun workshop on money. It's based on a book called Your Money or Your Life. It sounds fabulous. I haven't read the book myself, but we're going to be guided through a process of bringing awareness to money. And it's a lot bigger than that. It's money and looking at money in terms of energy and how we can make good choices for ourselves to have a life we actually want, and using sort of money as a catalyst for doing that. So that is scheduled to start on April the 20th. And there will be some information coming out about that soon. I think there's already some information out about that. Another thing, for folks who are in California, in the Bay Area, there's going to be a little art workshop at the Palo Alto Zen Center on May the 3rd. I'm actually not even sure if the announcement has gone out yet, but we're going to do, there's somebody in the Sangha has, as a fundraiser, has created a series of art pieces, and they're going to be hung up, and it's going to be like an exhibition at this place in Palo Alto down there. And so we thought in the morning that day we could do an art workshop and then all go and look at the paintings that this person has created. So we're really excited about that. And then one more thing, we're already starting to focus on the Bridge Walk, the fundraiser for Africa we do every year in the fall. The first ad actually is about ready to go out. It's highlighting fundraisers that people are doing. There's three or four in different places throughout the country where these things are happening. So you might check that out and see if you happen to be in the area of one of those and can participate. And also, you know, put it on your schedule. Put the Bridge Walk on your schedule for this next year. It's on October the 3rd. And that's all the announcements. So, again, I said this at the beginning, and I'm going to say it again because I really mean it. I really appreciate everyone's participation. It's been very fun for me to do this. It's something of an experiment to do a class like this over a conference call and email, and I feel like it's really worked well, and it's been really fun and really helpful for me. So I really appreciate everybody kind of showing up to participate and create this experience for all of us. And keep on plugging away. I hope you keep up the work, and we'll look forward to seeing you hopefully sometime or hearing from you, depending on what you do in the very, very near future. So take really good care of yourselves, and thank you again very much. Bye-bye.